Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to continuing coverage in the Las Vegas reporter murder trial of Robert Telles from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Like, he's got a little hitch in his getup where he kind of leans to this one side. You can kind of see it. There's something that is about his little walk. And look, you don't have to take my word for it. You can evaluate whether you think What Zach and Christy had to say about it. They've hung out with him. They've walked with him. They thought, and think about how they saw it. They were like, man, they kind of knew the background between Garamond and Telles, and they were like, wouldn't that be funny if that was him? He's got those same goofy gray shoes. Like, that was the thing. Like, they noticed the shoes, which I think is really interesting, you know? But they don't act on it at first. But it's only when they see the Yukon that they kind of flip out and they're like, well, we probably should call on this. The only person who came and said that wasn't him is Nicole. And listen, you'll have all of Nicole's texts. The state would submit to you that, look, there is no doubt she has a kinship to Mr. Telles. You can see it in the text messages. You can see it. You can go read through them. The state would submit she has a bias. And like, she cares about him. And I think he was probably good to her in the office, which is understandable. But look, you can judge it on your own. You can judge the testimony of those other people. You can make that call for yourself. But I would submit to you, when you look at this, think about all the other evidence in the case. Think about all the other evidence, the motive, the physical things found in his house, his DNA underneath the nails. When looking at this and being like, is that him? And the state would submit to you, when you put all that together and you watch this video, absolutely, it's him. Professional killer versus amateur killer. Mr. Telles would like you to believe that this was an assassin with combat training. The state would submit to you, you don't need combat training to stab people. You don't have to go to knife school. You don't have to do that. If you're angry enough, you can stab people pretty good. If you got enough hate in your heart, you can really go at people. And I would submit to you, the state would submit to you, that Mr. Telles had had enough of being exposed, written about, publicized, embarrassed, and he wasn't going to have it done again. Because at this point, the state would submit, Garamond had taken everything from him. Everything. Everything that he worked for. He worked his way up through law school. He got himself elected, and this guy took it all from him. And so he wanted to take something from Jeff, and that was his life. Professional assassins don't use their personal vehicles. They don't use their personal phones or work computers to conduct reconnaissance. They don't wear attention-grabbing outfits. They don't flee the scene and then double back to pull right up to a murder scene to look for possibly dropped evidence. And they don't leave items of clothing or apparel they use in the murder inside their own house. Professionals don't do that. The state would submit to you that what this was an amateur attempt by Mr. Telles to pull off this killing. But here's the thing. It is thoughtful. It is deliberate. He really did a thoughtful job about it. I give him credit. But in the world of the digital age, we leave behind too many breadcrumbs. And when you're not a professional, and you are an amateur, you tend to make mistakes. And that's what he did. For example, really smart idea. He knew about IDI Corps. Hey, I've got a really easy way to look up personal identifying information on people. I'll use my work computer. But what does he not realize? That we can, as the police, download the computer and literally see your keystrokes. How could he have known that? He wouldn't. It's an oversight. It's a mistake. It's a slip. And it's evidence that we collect against him. What else? He does the Google Maps surveillance. Really clever. What an easy way. You don't even have to go to the neighborhood. Just pull it up on your Google Maps. He does the Popeye surveillance. He takes the photos off of his work computer, right? But he forgets to delete his cache files. And let's just make this clear once and for all. Matt Hovanitz told us what? He said that these are not created photos. They would say created in a date, in a time, and you'd have it. Those don't exist on the phone. I wonder why that is. Why do you think there aren't all those images? Forget the Google Maps surveillance, right? That's just, those are probably images that the program pulls up. Sometimes it's referred to as tiling. But like the Popeye's photos, which are coming from the phone, and the one from the work computer, why don't we have any created photos? The state would submit to you that Mr. Telles, being the smart guy that he is, the techie, as he describes himself, deleted them out of his photo album. But the problem is, he didn't delete his cache. And we learn from Matt Hovanitz that the caching of photos is what happens. The example that we heard was, say you want to send an email, and the computer will shrink down the actual image to get down data size lower so it can go out. He didn't delete the cache. He deleted the actual photo, but not the cache. And so those dates tell us that essentially in the month of October, he is doing all of these things. He tried to get rid of it. He couldn't get rid of all of it because he's an amateur. He conducts reconnaissance in August, but doesn't realize that the police are going to acquire the 8-8 email about the public records request, right? Like, did he really, he probably didn't realize that we would go into the PA's office and say, hey, we want what communications are out there, and we get the email. Now we understand the significance of why these things are all happening in August, because we get the email. He didn't account for that. Here's another thing. He shut off all his location services in August, but doesn't realize it's going to stick out like a sore thumb during a location services analysis. And here's the crazy part. His expert gave it to us. His expert said, I have 13 years of location data on this phone, but for the month of August, it's a zero. It's a bagel. Why? Why that month? Because it's right, he's planning the killing. He knows he's going to those spots. He doesn't want to be tracked. He's no dummy. He's smart. But the problem is, that is an electronic breadcrumb. An entire month, no location data at all for anywhere that he traveled. That was the testimony of his witness. And he didn't claim that that information was hacked or compromised. What else? He decides to wear gray Nikes, but forgets to delete the shoes off his phone. And then he fails to get rid of the shoes in time by the time the cops do the search at his house. Maybe life just kind of gets in the way, right? He's maybe doing it late at night when the kids are asleep and his wife's, doing a little, I don't know where he's planning on sprinkling the bits of the shoe, but like clearly he wants to do that to shrink it, and maybe it's harder to find. Like, he's putting it in a place that only he would find it, like underneath the recliner. And like, he can't account for like the one random photo where like his murdering shoes are right there when he's out rock climbing. Like, he can't plan for that. In all the hundreds or thousands of images are there, he can't plan for that. Creates the disguise of the construction worker, but doesn't account potentially for an interaction. And then again, he leaves his phone at home, which is smart, right? So we don't see the movement of the phone kind of going with the Yukon, right? But the problem is that when you go radio silence for like 5 hours and you start ignoring your wife's calls and texts, that's a problem. And then, great example. He gets up here and he tells us the whole story about the chicken fried rice. He was so happy to share that story. I was making my daughter lunch because she doesn't eat the school lunches, and I cut the tip off and I started bleeding, so I went and got the super glue and I cut it and they got blood. And so that's why the DNA, that's the one time he was fine with DNA. But like, he doesn't realize that all we have to do is start checking it. Is there a Google recipe for chicken fried rice on your phone? And there wasn't. because that's what he said he was doing. He didn't just say I was making a meal. He specified how he was doing it. He was like using a recipe, and that's the most logical place you would do it. People are not bringing their desktop computers and putting it in their kitchen when they're cooking fried rice. Like, that's not how that's going down. Like, he was, if that their story was true, and we would submit it as not because it's not there in the phone, he probably would have sat there with his phone on the counter, hit the YouTube or the Google recipe, and then he's working. So it should be there. But it's not. Because that was something used to explain why in the world would my DNA be on the scissors. Again, another example. He goes to great lengths to park down the street. And then it all goes down the drain when he leaves because he realizes, oh, I probably forgot something. So he wheels back and parks right in front of the house. That's a huge mistake. It's an amateur mistake. Here's another one, and I just noticed it while watching it. He left the garage door open. If you watch the video, after he does the killing, he walks away, the garage door is totally open. And then when he drives back and he gets out, he has two opportunities to close the door. What did we learn about what prompts the neighbors to worry about Jeff? It's the garage door. The hitman, the assassin shuts that garage door. But not an amateur, like Mr. Tellis. Because in the panic of the moment, he's just like, I gotta get out of here as quickly as possible. It's a slip, it's a small slip, but it's reflective of who we're dealing with. And then he forgets to get rid of the hat. He forgets to get rid of the bag. He forgets to wipe his phone entirely. Next time, factory reset. Full factory reset. Hopefully that'll clear it all. Probably be up in the cloud. But the point is, he doesn't do the things he needs to do. They're amateur mistakes. It happens. But that's why it's hard to pull off the perfect murder in the digital age. And about that gray bag. The defendant told us on the stand he'd like to think he wouldn't have removed his children's basketball and football to use it in a murder. Remember that? And there's the bag. And there's the bag. And there it is. And the defense in his closing arguments claimed, said, we submit that there's sawdust inside the bag. Well, let's take a closer look at the sawdust. See that bag? Let's take a closer look. Remember the big sun hat? Is that sawdust? Doesn't look like little chipped up little bits. Looks more longer and rectangular and flat. Here's the hat. Here are those bits, long and rectangular. The state would submit to you, he put his chopped up hat in that bag and then transferred the bag into the Sprouts bag, put the basketball and the football back inside. That is not sawdust. I want to touch on some things that were brought up in closing argument. That Garen's DNA is the only one at the scene. Well, our response is, well, his DNA is underneath Garen's nails. So that's a huge problem. Not in his vehicle or in his clothing. He got rid of his clothing. We'd submit he cleaned his car. He also wasn't surveilled 24 hours a day. There was no positive ID from him at the scene. And that is correct. And listen, that's why we have this instruction about direct and circumstantial evidence. Because in Nevada, the law doesn't make a difference between the two. You can weigh it as you wish. Some cases have incredibly powerful examples of circumstantial evidence. Sometimes you've got a combination of both. Sometimes it's all direct. But there's tons of direct evidence, like him in the Yukon. Like, that's to be tracked from literally silk tassel all the way to his house and then all the way back is incredible. You heard about how many officers it took to track and go business to business to business to business. That's direct evidence. You've got the circumstantial evidence of his DNA. You've got the shoes with his DNA in it that's chopped up. You've got the hat. You have the surveillance in the phone. You have the whole motive laid out from the articles. I mean, okay, you're right. We didn't have one person standing out going, I watched Mr. Tellis stab Mr. Gehrman. You're right. But we got a whole lot of other evidence. There's no surveillance of Tellis exiting his home. You've heard testimony about it repeatedly. There wasn't cameras in the area. we just have surveillance of the street that's perpendicular to his driveway. And I thought I had pulled up, maybe I didn't, I apologize. I tried to put the image of that, but I want to address that. It might be still in here. Go back and check the map, because the way it actually works is Piggott Elementary, when he's coming in and out in his red Yukon and going to the gym in his BMW at the end, the street that comes down perpendicularly to turn out along the Piggott Elementary, that street is Silk Tassel. And when you look at a map, if you follow Silk Tassel, it perpendicularly, it runs into his driveway. Like, all he has to do is, like, drive out of his driveway and he's already on Silk Tassel. So you're right, like, we don't have him getting out of his car from his driveway, but we literally have the only street he needs to take to get to Piggott Elementary. It is not streets and streets and streets. It's the street before his driveway. There's the argument, well, Metro makes mistakes. There's that deletion of a traffic signal. Well, as I've just pointed out, Tell's made a ton of mistakes himself. So we will own that, you know, on one traffic stop, we didn't mark a proper event number. And you can give it whatever weight you want. Tell's cutting himself while cooking. You know, again, we've talked about the chicken fried rice thing. That's not backed up. Wouldn't there be blood from the cut? Not necessarily. What if he had gloves on? And he's kind of cutting his tip. It may not be pouring everywhere. And again, look at that scene. The majority of the blood is of Mr. Gehrman is actually just kind of pooling from where he's resting. It's not splattered all over the house walls. It's not that type of scene. I mean, Gehrman's shoes are such a good example of that. Like, he's the guy who gets killed. He's the one stabbed 11 times. And his shoes are relatively clean. And he's not doing a lot of walking. A lack of responses to junk messages. That's true, but there are work messages he's not responding to, and his wife is reaching out to him, and he ain't responding for hours. That's a problem. That's a problem for him. Especially, go look at, when you're not in the murder window, go look at the communications. So, like, when his daughter reaches out to him in the morning, he responds like that. No issue. Like, at 3 o'clock or so, or 2:30, when Tonya, his ex-wife, responds with a question about the kids, he responds immediately. And what did he tell us on the stand? What did he tell us on the stand about being at Summerlin Area Command? What was his big worry? My family doesn't know where I am. I was so worried about being detained there because I couldn't reach out to my family, because that was the most important thing. And what do we know on the day of the murder in the murder window? His wife wants to know where he is, and he's not telling her. That is significant, because his pattern is, when you look outside the murder window, he promptly responds to family members about family matters. But he goes silent with his wife when he's literally in Mr. Gehrman's neighborhood. And another thing, remember his face when I showed him the Apple photo for the first time? If anybody remembers, store that one away. Because he was very comfortable on direct talking about the timeline. And he had his story all lined up. And when I showed him the photo, that the message that wasn't there, that face really changed. And you can weigh that when evaluating his credibility and his responsibility for this. And then there was the argument about DFL analyst Havanas couldn't say one way or another if it was deleted. Well, you're right. He's like, I can't definitively say it. What he does say is, I mean, I can see from the photos the message is there. I can see in the timeline it's not there. Sometimes there are situations where people delete things deliberately and it's marked as deleted, so it'll appear in an extraction report. But sometimes people delete messages and it's not. But he can't definitively say for certain. So I would submit this to you, ladies and gentlemen. Look at all the surrounding evidence in the case. And then you can reach a conclusion about this. Because, ladies and gentlemen, circumstantial evidence is a chain of facts that lead you ultimately to a conclusion. It's like connecting the dots. And so if you're wondering about this, look at the phone evidence. Look at the motive. Look at the physical evidence in his house. Look at the timeline of when he's gone. Look at the when the Yukon is where it is in relation to just nothing is going out on this phone. And then you decide, you can make a call about whether, and his manner on the stand, listen to him testify, and then you can decide whether he actually deleted that message. And I'm going to get to the significance of why maybe that message was deleted in a bit. And again, claims couldn't tell, Hovannik couldn't tell you the cache date on the phone. The state would submit, and you can check your notes, that's not his testimony. He never said, I can't tell you the cache date. He said, I couldn't tell you the creation date. He said, the cache date is something different. That's what the report is showing me. That's the last time this image interacted with the phone. So that's the time that those smaller images are interacting with those phones, all those dates in August. Not bagging the hands. And that was an argument being made. Like, no one could tell us exactly who. So I would say, what means what? Has there been testimony that the DNA evidence was compromised? There was no evidence of that. What is being asked of you? You're being asked to speculate. And you have an instruction on reasonable doubt. And reasonable doubt must be actual, not mere possibility or speculation. Speculation doesn't get you there. It's improper to speculate. Ah, here it is. I knew I didn't forget it. Common was streets away from his home. That's not correct. That's his house. This is the road. When you're watching that Yukon come in and out, and his BMW coming out, this is what you're seeing. So you're right, we didn't get any homes in this area with camera footage. But we got about 5 miles worth other than that. There was an argument, does it make any sense that there aren't any other cameras in the neighborhood? And my response would be, did you see Mock's presentation? Does this appear to be a case of Metro's not interested in collecting video? There's like 28 sources. The state would submit to you, if there was a camera that was working, that was closer to his house, they would have gotten it, and we would have wanted it. And then there was the video that they showed of this other car, right? With someone presumably with hair and glasses. The state would encourage you, by all means, go compare it to the rest of the videos. Compare it to the rest of the videos. And compare it with all the other evidence. And then you get to weigh it. Because we did hear from Mr. Martinez. What did he also say was going on in that neighborhood? There was a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour construction project where they're repairing a sewer line. I asked Mr. Martinez, what did you guys wear? We wore orange things, right? And in that video of that car, there's someone in an orange thing. Is it possible that that's one of the workers from the sewage project? He's seen to be coming down the road in that first video. He's coming from the road where Mr. Martinez said he was waving people off, remember? Martinez said, I saw that when we saw the first video, right, of the car approaching and the white truck pulls up, he said he was going out there to tell that person, you can't come down this other way. And the video that the defense shows you shows a car coming from that other way. And if we marry the testimony of Mr. Martinez, the state would submit that's the construction area. In all likelihood, that's just another worker. But you get to weigh it. You get to weigh it with everything else. Then there's this argument about Jabby mysteriously inserting himself in the homicide event. Really? Is that the testimony? Detective Jabby told us that he had to attend the Metro briefing that night. Why? It makes sense. He's literally a detective that's working on an investigation on him. Does it make sense that Metro would want all people maybe involved or some kind of connection? Absolutely. But did you really hear a situation where he was injecting himself into Justine Gaddis's investigation? The answer is no. Detective Gaddis talked about contacting him from time to time, and when contacted, he either met the person or responded, but there really isn't any evidence of him interfering with an investigation. And then here's the other thing. There's testimony from a CSA saying he was taking his own photos and collecting his own evidence. What is the significance of this? We do know from Detective Jappy, he is conducting two investigations at that time for Compass and Telus. It goes on until January of 2023. So is it possible he is collecting information tying to one of those? It's possible. But the better question is this. What evidence do we have that Jappe's presence being there compromised any CSA's collection of the information they needed to get? Did you hear a CSA say, like, he didn't let me pick up that computer that I needed to take? He didn't let me take Roberta's computer. Did you hear anything like that? That he was some sort of obstacle from the CSAs doing their work in the PA's office? The answer is no. So what is the point of bringing this up? It is an argument or a suggestion asking you to speculate, because there isn't any evidence that he interfered with their collecting of evidence at the PA's office. It's not there. And then the DA didn't pursue charges, and I would submit that was significant. That's what he said. Respectfully, the defense doesn't expound upon the significance. He just said it was significant, but doesn't expound why. Why is that significant? He never explains it. It just stops. And the state would submit to you, the testimony of Derek Jappe is really significant, because Mr. Tellis would have you believe that, like, he's being framed by Derek Jappe and his complaints about Compass are not being taken seriously. And he got up on the stand and Derek Jappe told you the exact opposite. He exonerated Mr. Tellis from what he was hearing from Reader Reed and people in the PA. He exonerated him. But he's supposed to be the head co-conspirator for Metro. Why would he exonerate him? And then he did go to the DA's office and said, I think we should pursue charges against Compass, and was told, listen, due to this loophole, it's not going to work. Like, you have inconsistent information about what these people are notified or not. And the court records do show that, you know, Cindy Sauerland is identifying, you know, when they want to file on this case or, you know, notify next kin. Like, there's records that match up. So even the, it's just like, it's literally the exact opposite of what Mr. Tellis wanted to have uncovered by Jappe. And like, he didn't, I mean, if he really was out to get him, like, he should have just stopped when the arrest was made and we could be done. But that's not what he does. So I want to get to the defendant's testimony. There's a credibility instruction. You were instructed that you need to consider witnesses, and he's, since he testified, he's a witness, consider his manner upon the stand. Think about what his fears, motives, interests, or feelings are, and the reasonableness of his statements, and the strength and weaknesses of his recollections. And then here's the kicker. Under Nevada law, if you believe a witness has lied about any material fact in the case, you may disregard the entire testimony of that witness or any portion of their testimony, which is not proved by other evidence. The state would submit to you that arguably, Mr. Tellis' test, he might have been our best witness. Based on his manner on the stand, based on the things that he said, he spent 2.5 hours on that first day, and almost 80% of it is talking about things he did in the public administrator's office. It's not about the actual, like, murder or like what he's doing on that day. He just wanted to regale you with all of his achievements as a public administrator, and how he fought against people standing in his way. And the state would submit to you, as my co-counsel told you in opening statements, that's not what this case is about. It's not about whether he was a good manager or not. It's not about if he had an inappropriate relationship. This is about whether or not he had a motive to kill Jeff Gehrman, and did he in fact do it? And he did. He was, think about his difference in how he spoke to you on direct on a narrative versus trying to answer my questions. How many times did I have to repeat, sir, my question is this, bring you back to my question. Sir, I didn't ask you why. I asked you a yes or no. Think about that for a second. And think about this. What are his fears and motivations in this point in time when he sits on that chair and he's talking to you? And we're going to get to something about that that I think is very significant. And it's right here. He took the stand and he admitted on cross-examination that he lied during his May 11, 2022 interview with Jeff Gehrman. I asked him, what was it the part that you were untruthful about? And he said it was about my relationship with Roberta. And he said, and I said, you know, he said, I didn't think the public should have to know about that. And it was really important to conceal that information from his family. This is really significant, because what it tells you is that back in May, when he was facing just an election, he was willing to lie to protect his job and to save his marriage. Now, the stakes are even higher. They're far higher. So you get to evaluate, are the things that Mr. Tallis is now saying, is it possible he could be lying about some of those details? Because this is far greater than that. Think about the difference in his body language, his ease of sharing information, when I'd ask versus when he just had free rein to say whatever he wanted. They're like night and day. And the state would submit that the defendant's view of this situation is completely divorced from the evidence in the case. It's like he's talking about a thing that's, it couldn't be farther apart. He talks about these conspiracies, but he's so short on details. Always. Oh, he took a bribe. Did you see someone take a bribe? No, I didn't, but it's just in my gut. I think that happened. That doesn't work. That's not evidence. Something in your gut, or I just feel it, that's not evidence. And when you think about it, it does make sense. Because if Mr. Tallis had to be honest about what the evidence is in this case, it's a very difficult thing for him to explain away. It's his DNA underneath the fingernails. It's his car that's there. It's his Google Maps images in his phone. He's conducting surveillance at Popeyes. He's using his computer to look up information on this guy. He's got these text messages explaining how upset he is about everything involving Gehrman. That's a huge problem. Because really, he's the only person who wants Gehrman dead. He's the only one. And really, this was kind of, in my mind, what jumps out to me. It's like a because I said so. Like when I pressed him on things, like why is this? And it was just simply because that's how I feel. That's not evidence. And again, the defendant is also selective during his testimony about what evidence had been compromised versus properly collected. Great example was the scissors DNA. At the beginning, I'm like, the DNA in the fingernail, you couldn't get an inch out of him agreeing with that. I'm like, you at least agree with me that it's been planted, and you didn't even want to do that. But he had come up with a story about cutting his finger, so he's fine with that DNA being on the scissor. That's a nice contrast. And he picked and chose. And you can check your notes on that. But that, to me, is really significant because he was fine talking about certain pieces of evidence that he thought was good. Great example, the timeline on direct. He's happy to tell you his narrative on direct because he forgets about the where are you. And then on cross, when I confront him with the where are you, now things are a little bit different. But he had no issue with anything in that timeline at first. And another thing, when the defendant testified, a lot of times he didn't use phraseology like, I didn't do this, or I didn't do that, or I didn't stab him, or I didn't go to that scene. It was never that. I mean, maybe from times he would say it, you'll check your notes, but the vast majority of the time, Mr. Tallis would say it like this. I'd like to think I wouldn't do something like this. I'd like to think that I wouldn't do that. I'd like to think I wouldn't take my children's sports balls out of the bag to use for a killing. It's an interesting phraseology. The state would submit it's a bit of a tell. Because he could have just simply said, I didn't do that. I didn't touch that bag. But that's not how he words his behavior. It's this like Monday morning quarterback. I'd like to think I wouldn't. Because it's really bad. You can weigh that when you're evaluating how honest and truthful he was when testifying. And again, for all his talk about being conspired against by powerful enemies, it's actually the defendant that uses the power of his office's proprietary software to spy on and discover where Gehrman lives and what type of car he drove. He used the power of the office, Mr. Tallis. And here's another thing. Remember the map that they brought up, kind of trying to show the drive from the PA's office to Popeyes? When you study that, remember it's Analyst Hovannik's testimony. Those reports out of Axiom from the work computer aren't converted for UTC time. So he was trying to use it to say, like, I couldn't have done this at this certain time. It's not UTC converted. And then we get to where are you? Remember, every single message between the defendant and his wife on 922 are on the timeline, with the exception of "Where are you?" So here are the messages: "Where are you?" Now they're talking about his daughter, you know, collecting or selling things. "Wow, that's incredible. There's a doctor's appointment. Are you at the doctor's appointment?" "No, we're at the barbershop." "Oh, okay." Then there's a text about the scheduling of the appointment, and then he also has picture read. All of that's on that Apple Watch. Oh, and also the deposited message. And then when you look, it's all the same stuff, with the exception of "Where are you?" That's the one thing that's not there. There's the cards thing, there's "That's incredible," "At the doctor's appointment," "The barbershop," "Oh, okay," "The appointment last week," "Picture day," and then the deposited message. It's all there except for "Where are you?" So why is this significant? Number one, the defendant cannot answer this text or pick up her call because the phone is at home while he is murdering Gehrman. Number two, the defendant couldn't leave this message on his phone. Why? Because it would reveal that even his wife is looking for him at the time of the murder. And third, given the state of their relationship at that juncture, given what you've now kind of acknowledged what he was doing privately, if your wife calls and you have your phone on you, you're going to take that call. You're going to answer that text message. You're not going to let that sit for like 5 hours. No way. No way. Some final thoughts. And I want you to think about this one. This is something I never actually asked Mr. Tellis on the stand, and I really tried to ask as many of these, but this one really struck me. The Las Vegas Metropolitan, blah, blah, blah. If the Metro Police Department, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department was really in on a conspiracy to get the defendant, right, to truly get him, here's a question for you. Why not let him die in the tub? You saw the video. Why not let that man bleed out? You had your opportunity, and yet they don't take it. Mr. Tellis's life is saved that day. And who ends up saving his life? Why, it's none other than the head conspirator from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. It's Detective Derek Jappe. He testified that he spent 2 hours on the phone talking him off this ledge. 2 hours. And then you got to watch the footage. They saved his life. If the conspiracy is really true, Derek Jappe doesn't do that. Metro doesn't do that. They literally let him bleed out. But that didn't happen. And the reason is, ladies and gentlemen, is because there never was a conspiracy. You made a commitment when we did voir dire to follow the law. The law in this case is abundantly clear. These three theories of liability are abundantly clear. He is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt on all three theories, and it's not close. And so we ask you to follow the law and follow the evidence. Do not speculate, but follow the evidence. As my co-counsel brought up, in the end, this is not a case about politics. It's not about alleged inappropriate relationships. It's not about who's a good boss or who's a good supervisor or favoritism at work. It's just about murder. And I want to end, if I could, just want to make sure that this is working, with something that Mr. Tellis said in his interview that really struck me. And I noticed it during the opening statement, and it's this.
And people just cannot get to do whatever they want.
And it's just that people don't get to do whatever they want. For once, the state of Nevada is in agreement with Mr. Tellis. He doesn't get to do whatever he wants. He took the life of an individual who was simply doing his job because he didn't like how it impacted him personally. Please hold him accountable for murdering Jeff Gehrman. Thank you very much.
Okay, at this time, the clerk will swear the officers in the court will take charge of the jury panel.
you do solemnly swear that you will keep this jury together in some private and convenient place, that you will not permit any person to speak to them, nor speak to them yourself, unless it be by order of the court, except to ask them whether they have agreed upon a verdict, and that you will return them into court when they have so agreed. So help you God.
Yes.
Okay, at this time, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be excused. When you go back, you're going to have lunch. After lunch, our two alternates, Mr. Max Gross and Zachary Creason, you will go with one of the court officers. At that time, the clerk will bring back all of the evidence, and you'll begin to deliberate upon your verdict. So when you're done eating lunch, make sure Officer Hawks knows, and the clerk will bring back the evidence. Thank you very much, and you're excused.
Thank you all. Right.
Okay.
Please come in just 1 second.
Okay, no problem.
He's putting his tie on there.
Taking place outside the presence of the jury panel. I received a note from the jury foreperson. It's been marked as court's exhibit number 24. First question is, can we have more paper? We have taken more paper back to him. And the next question is, how do we zoom in on the videos? I don't know how to do that. We don't. That's why we asked you to bring your IT person. And so,
what do we have?
Sure. I mean, I don't know if, I mean, if we can show them, if we can show the foreperson how to do it, or we'll have to bring them back in the courtroom.
So do you know if there were to zoom in on certain videos?
Mr. Draskovich did it.
I know how to do it.
Yes.
You did it.
Mike knows how to do it.
They have a laptop back mm-hmm. there.
And I was told it did have a Zoom capability, so that was...
Okay, will you just come up and state your name for the record?
My name is Jenna Baldami.
Okay, if we brought the laptop out, would you be able to determine?
Sure, I can take a look at it. Depending on what the player is, it should have that capability.
Do you know what the player is on the...
I've never seen the player before, so I would have to inspect it.
Oh, you mean the laptop, whatever's on the laptop?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so I'll go out and I'll ask the officer of the court to ask the foreperson to bring the laptop out. Okay. You want to come in the hallway?
Sure.
The attorneys can come back here.
All right, thank you.
Oh, sorry.
May the record reflect that the hearing is continuing to take place outside the presence of the jury panel. The state's... And that's an employee from your office, correct?
That's correct.
Jetta Balgami. She went with the court officer back into the jury deliberation room, showed the jurors how to do it, and they did that without objection. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Draskovich?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and so they're continuing to deliberate.
Thank you.
More continuing coverage in the Las Vegas Reporter murder trial of Robert Tellez is on the way. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today, press subscribe now.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk.
Still aiming.
While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side.
Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for a little Hollywood style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.